You are tuned to CICK News on 93.9 FM in Smithers, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., and 4 p.m. CICK News is your news source for regional and provincial news with a local perspective. It's hosted by Dan Messick and myself, Pamela Hassan. Find and follow CICK News online at smithersradio.com and frequencynews.ca or wherever you get your podcasts. CICK News is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada. This is your CICK News for Tuesday, May 21st. On today's show, I'm bringing you a myriad of interviews and conversations that I had during last week's North Central Local Government Association conference, which was held in Smithers for the first time in 12 years. Topics discussed ranged from housing to First Nations taxation incentives, BC hydro power plans, resolutions brought forth from the many communities that were represented this year, housing, the opioid crisis, and of course, forest fires. Established in 1955, the North Central Local Government Association is the advocacy body for local government officials in North Central British Columbia. From Hundred Mile House to the Yukon border and from Haida Gwaii to Alberta, the association represents over 240 elected officials in over 40 local governments. The NCLGA is the only democratically elected body representing North Central British Columbia, and their board serves as the voice for an area that encompasses 69% of British Columbia's landmass, 7% of its population base, and almost 60% of the Indigenous population of British Columbia. As a nonpartisan nonprofit association, they work specifically for the benefit of their members, communities whose voices are often left unheard because of the size or location. They are one of five associations in British Columbia, working closely with their partner associations as well as provincial counterpart, the Union of BC Municipalities. On a day-to-day basis, they work to move resolutions forward, address emerging and shared issues in their communities, and help articulate the members' perspectives and priorities to a broader audience. The NCLGA says they give voice to our region's residents through forming close relationships with government, provincial and federal, media, industry, and other organizations. This specifically means being present at the table when all key decisions affecting our region are being made, rather than left to deal with any possible consequences. Stay tuned today on CICK News to hear those conversations with members from Williams Lake, Chetwynd, the RDBN, Vanderhoof, as well as a final comment from Smithers Mayor Gladys Attrill at the very end of today's broadcast, on the very last day, at the very last moment of the conference, while she was also saying goodbye to so many people coming up to her and thanking her. So let's start with a conversation with the NCLGA president, Sheila Bem.
I'm Sheila Bem. I'm a counselor with the City of Williams Lake, but in this current role, I'm actually hosting as president of North Central Local Governments Association, NCLGA.
Your role as the president, are you in a lot of discussions beforehand uniquely with people from communities, or are you managing how this conference is going?
So a bit of both. So NCLGA is comprised of members from around the whole of northern BC, so everywhere from 100 Mile North. We always say we're the largest area representation. We're 70% of the actual landmass of the province. But then we also rely on everybody goes back to their own areas and comes up with other resolutions that they also think pertain to the whole province, so that when we take those resolutions back, what we're hoping is when we go to UBCM in September, that they're also thought of for the whole province.
What do you feel like are the most glaring things that are being spoken at this conference that you think will be brought toward the UBCM this year?
Yeah, it's not just this one. We have to think of in prior years, we've brought ones that I think are big priority items like the opioid crisis. Housing is always a big one, and legislation that comes down and doesn't involve us, involving infrastructure. But for this conference, I think related to the downturn in the economy and all of the announcements with Canfor and all the pullout of forestry, I think the economic development for me has been the biggest one for this one going forward, different than maybe some of the others. But the ones we looked at the other day were ones to deal with more of the housing, the safety, the community safety. Safety, and those would be always some of our top asks. Yeah.
I'm not sure because I'm putting you on the spot, but are there specifics as far as community safety and housing that will be brought forth this, that were decided on that to be brought forth this year?
For instance, support for the forestry communities, agricultural support as well, healthcare infrastructure funding, even healthcare workers doing, like all these were like healthcare, the opioid crisis, like all the, and that comes into community safety. And the homelessness, who's paying for that? How are we supporting that? Because in the north, we have such smaller communities to support those, but it's around the province. These are provincial issues, like Ig said, that we all know that everybody's going to support and will probably likely come from other area associations as well.
I guess I wanted to ask this, and maybe this is more how your role as a president, you would help navigate some sort of tough discussions, such as things like resource extraction and the need for industry versus climate goals. So what's the method for navigating that schism where people obviously have very differing backgrounds and experiences? What does that process look like?
I think you saw that even today. I don't know if you were here for all of the speakers, but I think when you have ones like BC Hydro talking about how they're going to have to get through, but thinking about green alternatives, but also our gas producers were here too, talking about how they're looking at green alternatives and how there's just so many things that so it's making them look at their industry different to try and factor those in. So I think even in the north, there's different ways of looking at the economics of that. And overall, I think everybody's looking at that, but I think we also need resource in the north, and I think the north knows that more than any, but it often trickles down south for the other areas, but that we need to look at resources, and things like forestry is a manageable resource, and we do need gas. It's not going to be gone, the need, by 2035, so and there's not enough power, as BC Hydro just said today, there's not enough power even if we had enough electric cars to have more sightsee dams. I don't know how that's going to go, so it's what we're there for, to try and figure out. I'm going to have to get going here soon, but I think they're trying to call us.
Okay, we can leave it at that. Thank you so much, Sheila.
Or we can grab later. You're welcome. Sure. Anytime.
So right now, for example, Bulkley Valley SAR doesn't have ice rescue capability. So if there's an issue with ice, that help has to come from Houston or from Terrace. After Houston, Vanderhoof's the next one with it. We've got these big gaps in coverage that, although incidents may be few and far between, it's such a big landmass that we need to make sure that teams are ready to respond and have all the resources and the approval to train and get ready to get out there.
Mm-hmm. In the past, then, without those capabilities, is it sitting on your hands while you know that there's an emergency?
They have no capability for ice here now. Wow. It hasn't, and the province hasn't budged on that. They did make a couple of small concessions on a couple of capabilities. Mm-hmm. But really, if there is a demonstrable need, look at all the rivers and lakes around here. There's a need to have that ice rescue here. And there's other ones through different SAR groups that we need to make sure that they get those capabilities for probable incidents in their areas.
Is the reasoning from the province because there's not someone who's managing that project province-wide that they would not want locals who know the area very well to be able to manage that?
I think, again, it comes down to money. Specialty teams are expensive, and it does get billed back to the province when it goes out, but not having it in these vast stretches is a big problem. I can understand somewhat in the Okanagan where you've got fire departments and SAR teams close together, but up here we're spread far and thin. We need to make sure that we can respond to our local areas.
Mm-hmm. Did Vanderhoof bring forward that resolution, or was that through the RDBN?
That was the Regional District of Bulkley and Echaco.
Yeah, okay. How long have you been asking for this or wanting this?
It's been an issue for years. The regional district did facilitate a gathering of search managers from each community in Burns Lake to sit down and talk about what the needs were, and this really came out of that. It was what was asked for by the search managers.
In the past couple of years, have you noticed that there are new duties or capabilities that something maybe you didn't think was going to be part of search and rescue's purview before, that now it's sort of...
There are some. One that the province has moved on is canine, and Houston had a canine ready to go to come into the program, and that really depends on having a handler that wants to take the training and commit to the huge amount of work. So that's a one-off. Another one is though drone. Right now only a few teams can use drones on tasks, so that's something that, why wouldn't we use that technology as it comes on, so you don't have to put people into harm's way. You can search areas from something that isn't a human.
Yeah.
Kevin Moutre, Mayor of Vanderhoof.
My name is Joan Flaspoler. I'm a councillor with the City of Williams Lake.
Okay, can you talk to me about the resolution that you spoke on yesterday?
Yeah, there was some discussion pieces. There was a presentation from BC Wildfire to the members here within NCLGA. And I have experience from being previously the deputy fire chief in Williams Lake, and now I'm a local official. But I've had a lot of time within the industry partnering with BC Wildfire, doing structural protection, being on different deployments throughout the province. After we did the evacuation of Williams Lake in 2017, there is a building reluctance from people to want to evacuate or move. But from being in the industry and being boots on the ground and actually seeing what a high class fire looks like and what it can do, and this is what BC Wildfire is so familiar with, I think the general public sometimes, because they'll see more of a lower ranking fire, it doesn't look as threatening or scary, but when you have a weather system that dictates a fire to get to those high rankings, you don't have the time to egress. You don't have the time to get to a safe place. So people that now I think are getting more and more of not wanting to move or not trusting BC Wildfire, I just want to emphasize that the community needs to understand that there is a big difference from a small fire to a large fire. And when it gets to those stages, it's extremely dangerous.
It seemed like it was maybe people who don't have insurance as well. So that's their whole life. Do you have a picture of what that looks like?
Yes, you know, that insurance piece is real. And when people, unfortunately, are in that situation where it's everything they've worked for all their lives and they don't want to walk away from it, not only from the threat of fire or the fear of theft on their property when they're evacuated, which is a real thing, but there's that aspect of, is it worth it if it's your life? Yeah. And when you see in other countries where there is more deaths than what we've seen in BC, in my opinion, it's something that has to be considered, and we have to make sure that you have to value those things and look at the big picture, because you would never want to put yourself at risk. In 2017, people evacuated but left pets, and I know that sometimes it's very difficult, but it also I found very mind-boggling, because now we would get contacted of they had left their cat in the apartment and now they're still not home. And so the things you truly value, when BC Wildfire and the province is working to make it understood that there is a risk there, please respect it. And that's just from my own personal experience.
My last question was just if you could help me and our listeners understand, what is a high class fire?
I am not BC Wildfire. I'm now a local official. But like a high ranking fire is like a class 5 and I believe class 6 fire. That is when you're seeing a transfer of a fire more in the canopies. So really they should be speaking to it. But ultimately it's when you have the transfer of the fires a lot quicker through the canopy. It's not slow moving, lower on the ground. And those are the fires that have that weather system they almost create, which makes it so they are jumping kilometers ahead. So you may see it good right around you, but that doesn't mean that the road that you intend on taking quite a ways in front of you isn't compromised. And those are the things that BC Wildfire has their eyes on and you don't. So you got to trust those agencies, because I would hate to see where you get those bad stories where people have been hurt and it's just because they're worried about something they paid for when their life is worth way more.
Thank you so much for speaking with me.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Right, so Mike Bernier, I'm the MLA for Peace River South.
MLA Bernier, how will you work to make fire season more collaborative between Ministry of Forest, local gov, and search and rescue as well?
Yeah, obviously you hope to never have forest fires, but we've seen it starting up earlier this year. I know in this region here, we look around Burns Lake, Houston last year, how devastating it was and how long it took to get some of the fires out. I spent quite a bit of time here last year. And I think it's really important that collaboration at all levels of government, when you have some amazing, talented people that can actually help in the boardrooms all the way to the people on the front lines putting out fires. But it has to be collaborative. We have to have better communication, hopefully never get to a point where we have to evacuate people. But it really comes down to sharing that information as best as possible. One of the things for us provincially, you look last year, is over $1 billion was spent fighting fires. And so I always look at it and say that was necessary, but are there things we can do maybe in the front end to try to avoid it? Maybe do some thinning, some selective harvesting, and some community protection as well.
Do you have any thoughts on timber allocation quotas?
Oh, wow. Got lots of thoughts on those. But when it really comes down to, and what it boils down to, is right now have not been getting the quotas out that are approved. So by that, if you look at the annual allowable cuts that have been approved through government, and only about 45%, I think, this year actually got harvested. I've had companies from the Houston, Fort St. James area contact me saying they've been waiting over 800 days to get their permit. Obviously, companies, businesses can't operate that way if you don't know if you even have the trees to harvest, to bring them into the mills, to have people working. And as we were saying today at our NCLGA conference, a lot of our northern communities are founded, built around the resource sector in one way or another. It's what helps sustain our communities. We need to be understanding that and looking for opportunities to maintain it as well.
What's your definition of old growth forest?
Oh, geez. When you look at old growth forest, it's different right around the province. And there's been a lot of confusion around the discussion of old growth deferrals and the policies the government's put into place. I think that it's one of those things that we have to be careful with, in the sense of old growth typically is that picture that people have seen of the massive 8-foot diameter Douglas fir tree on the coast. That's, 800,000 year old tree. We don't have those up here. We don't have them in this region. So one of the specifics that we've been talking about when we talk about old growth is what should we really be protecting? There's a lot of areas of British Columbia that already are protected. The problem is, without doing the proper LIDAR work and knowing what's on the ground, when somebody in Victoria draws a circle on a map and says, this is old growth, nobody can go in there, and then you go hiking and find out that it's actually a bunch of 40-year-old poplar trees, it's not matching what the government's saying.
Is that maybe why localizing mills and logging companies that know the area, is that something that you think would be a change that you would like to see in BC?
I'll tell you, one of the big changes that we announced for the BC United Party is, if we're successful in the next election, is we are going to move, once and for all, the Ministry of Forests to Prince George. Bring it to where the industry is, rather than having people in downtown Victoria who have maybe, in all fairness, maybe had never even been to rural British Columbia, making decisions on forestry policy and practices. We have a lot of expertise out here. We have a lot of people that know what's happening on the ground. And it's only fair that those people be working in this region and making decisions based on what they know in the region. To your question, yeah, absolutely. We need to make sure that we have people on the ground that have that knowledge.
So. How does your history in the natural gas industry inform your perspective on resource development?
I spent 25 years almost working in the natural gas sector, starting in Terrace, moving right across Highway 16, ending up in Dawson Creek. Also, during that time, I spent time in local government as a councillor and a mayor. And so what I saw was that relationship between industries, companies, and communities, and how you really need to be working on that. I look at Chetwynd as a perfect example of what happened. A mill shut down, so those workers left. What people forget is now we lost two nurses, we lost four teachers, people that we needed in our small communities, professionals that can go work anywhere because they're high demand.
My last question was just, what does the BC United think about 2035 climate goals and becoming more green?
You can make sure that you put good policies in place. It's not about just turning our back on the environment. Obviously, not only politically, but societally, people expect us to do our best, the best we can for our communities, for our regions and the ecosystems, make sure we have the biodiversity that's required. And I think there is a huge partnership and relationship that can be achieved through supporting resource development while also supporting the environment.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Hello, I'm Julia Nelson. I'm a councillor with the District of Chetwynd.
Okay. Thanks so much for speaking to me. So yesterday you brought forth a resolution, and apologies because I'm paraphrasing here, but it was about Chetwynd relocation of the initial fire attack crew. Can you tell me what happened in April?
Yeah, absolutely. The NIFAC base was relocated, which means that they basically took our immediate response team and moved them out of town. And so we brought forward this resolution. We are petitioning the provincial government to bring it back.
Okay. What happened when the crew was removed?
They were relocated. They're centralizing these bases, so removing them from the smaller communities, moved to Dawson Creek, and all our local communities are really questioning this because mostly because of the geography, really. Dawson Creek is on a prairie. Chetwynd is in the foothills, surrounded by forests, really at risk and really vulnerable to wildfire.
How far away is Dawson from Chetwynd?
It's 1 hour drive. It's 100 kilometers. Yeah. And what it really looks like for us is the minister is telling us that it's 20-30 minutes delay response, but it's just simply too much.
Mm-hmm. And sorry, this is Bruce Ralston that you're talking about, the ministry?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Bruce Ralston with the Ministry of Forests is responsible for this change.
Okay.
Does that also mean that your emergency support services, your ESS for people who have been affected by fire in Chetwynd, does that mean that they also, like, everyone's going to Dawson City, or are you still able to at least help people initially right after a fire?
Our ESS is and it's all intact, and we in fact do have evacuees from Fort Nelson at this time. This is really the initial fire attack response team who had kind of accommodation in which they were living and ready to go to work immediately. We've been told that the infrastructure is outdated, and the truth of it is, as a district of Chetwynd, they didn't consult us. My local government would be more than willing to bring in new ATCO trailers, bring in new accommodations that enabled this team to live better, work better, but the question hasn't been asked.
Yeah.
Was there anything else that you wanted to add?
I would just really like to be heard on this one because I think that we're entering into a serious wildfire season. We had some extreme wildfire already in the area. Currently, Chetwynd was at risk to be fully evacuated in April already. And April is, honestly, it's still winter in the north. So we should not be dealing with this so soon. And it's an indication of what's to come. And it's really terrifying.
Name is Michael Moses. I'm a counselor for the city of Williams Lake. And we're here at NCLGA, the North Central Local Government Association, which I was just a board of director on one day ago and not anymore. Outgoing.
As a counselor for Williams Lake, what do you feel like your perspective is, or matters that are close to your heart that you hope that you make a difference for Williams Lake?
How much time do we have? A lot of the topics that I've been tackling more directly than the usual streets and water and sewer are in regard to helping people who are suffering through addictions right now, or through being unhoused, or various other mental health challenges.
Do you work with the Canadian Mental Health Association?
As a volunteer, as a board of director. Yeah.
So you have that perspective then. Is that something that you feel is too big of a question as well, but do you feel like it's manageable? Do you feel like it's something that your work as a volunteer and on the board makes a difference?
It completely makes a difference. The Canadian Mental Health Association organizations that are all over Canada, not just British Columbia, are making a great difference in every community, but not all of it can be left onto the shoulders of a nonprofit organization. We have local governments, we have provincial governments, we have the federal government that all need to be pulling their weight in this long haul as well, because this challenge isn't going away anytime soon. It's something that we require a lot of work, a lot of effort on from all governments.
I did do a little bit of a recording when you were doing your presentation on taxation, but could you give a brief overview of what you presented?
Yeah, we had a plenary session where we had a few speakers from the First Nations Tax Commission and from BC Assessment. So both of their jobs are to assess the value of properties across British Columbia or Canada. And they're everyone's favorite person, because when they say that the value of your property goes up, it means your taxes go up. Everyone likes to pinpoint that on the local government, but we don't really get a say on the value of your homes. So in this plenary session, they were describing how taxation works for First Nations people, whether in the municipality or on the reserve, and how First Nations governments have a little bit of control over how this works, but the majority of it is controlled through the federal government and the Indian Act. And one of my favorite things about those sessions were when they pinpointed how collaboration between local governments and First Nations governments can be of a great assistance to both sides in regards to creating land availability, creating housing opportunities, and creating a more sustainable tax base for both sides of government.
Yeah. Mark Parker, Chair of the Regional District, Bulkey-Nechako.
You spoke yesterday about staff overload with providing normal services during fire season. So what provincial support do you want to see from the RDBN?
What we need to see is bodies. We have limited staff, and when you have an EOC that's operating for 113 days straight, that's run by our local staff for the most part. And so that puts a strain on even their summer activities, their holiday time, family time, and then the workload that they should be doing in that period isn't getting done because they're stuck in the EOC for the entire 3 months. Mm-hmm. So at the end of that, then they go back, their work plans are off, they haven't created and got to what they need to get to and what their job is. We'd like to see the support, whether it's financial so that we can put people in there, but we preferably would be having a roaming EOC team that would go around the province and fill in at all of our EOCs so that our staff don't have to be in there constantly for the 113 days at a time.
I guess that kind of pivots nicely into just maybe the integration with local fire departments. So is that something you can speak on as well?
Yeah, so we've realized, and BC Wildfire Service has realized, and the province has realized that with the number of fires on the landscape now, the initial attack and response is so important. And there is all of the local fire departments that are trained. Having them be a part of the solution to be out there, whether first responding or working in tandem with the BC Wildfire Service, as well as some of the organized societies, which has been we've seen an increase in that as well, and huge success. We've got the Chinook Emergency Response Society on the south side of Burns Lake. They responded to over 25 fires last year and got them out before they got going. A huge savings to the province. So it's worth investing the money into these societies to get them trained, to get them supplied, and have them be part of the solution as well to get on things early and keep them under control.
Excellent.
Thank you so much for speaking with me.
Yeah, no problem.
How do you think it went as the host community of the NCLGA this year?
I think it really went really well. I'm really pleased. And I've got to say, you know, we got so much good feedback. And as the mayor of the community, sometimes you forget all the good things, and to have people come up and comment on what the town looked like, on how good the food was, on the friendly welcome, very affirming, and I'm grateful to the community for being as welcoming as we are.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer Pam Hassan and all of our roving reporters, I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.